Coming up on KUCB News, two generations of Ananga reflect on the bombing of Dutch Harbor and its aftermath, and the Alaska governor's race grows even bigger. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Monday, June 4th, 2018. Today marks the 76th anniversary of the bombing of Dutch Harbor, a Japanese attack that launched the Aleutian Campaign of World War II. During the two-day raid, Japan bombed on Alaska's military installations, destroyed the native hospital, and killed about 50 Americans. Soon after, the U.S. government removed the Anungan people from their homes in the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands and sent them to internment camps for the rest of the war.
It's just such a part of history that nobody knows. People today say, well, I never heard of that, yet they've heard of the Japanese internment.
That's Harriet Hope. She was just a child when Unalaska was bombed in early June of 1942. And now in her 80s, she shares her experience in her own words.
We knew the strike was coming, but we didn't know when or where or anything, but we had to live under the blackout rules and run to the dugouts down by the creek. The day of the bombing, I do remember my mother, she had a dream about something up in the sky dropping bombs. She had some kind of insight into it somehow through her tea leaves. And sure enough, you know, it like happened. And the morning of the first bombing, we heard the planes coming toward us from along the beach, and they were firing shots. And anyway, my brother just grabbed me, and I remember him just slamming my head up against the wall, and I was thinking about that and with planes. Why did he do that to me? And then he was hovering over me until the planes left. Now, once they took us down to the internment camps, we were there for 4 years. Of course, we were forced to leave with barely more than the clothes on our backs, which led us to believe that we'd only be gone a short time, you know, and they never would tell us where we were going, and never knew from day to day when we'd get any information on when we could go home. First, they dropped us off at Wrangell Institute, which is a native boarding school, and they separated all of the villages to different areas in Southeast. And every one of them were burnt out, abandoned canneries. And they just dropped us off there. And we just was left to fend for ourselves. It was like going to another planet. We had no plumbing, no electricity, no grocery store. We had none of the elements that would be normal today. We had eye infections. We had measles. We had a horrible flu that came through. The whole village would be sick. We found out that the United States had a prisoner of war camp about 20 miles from us. And they had everything. They had electricity, running water, they had food, they had everything they needed. And that just started my anger all over again. So many of our people have gone to heaven, but they've taken that anger with them. I was just hoping that somebody would see this and not ever let it happen to another group of people. It should just be mentioned. I wouldn't want to see it blown up or anything, but it should be casually as kids learn other history, you know, like slavery and things like that. I just would like people to know that there is a lot of deep history here. And World War II was part of that.
I didn't get much stories from my family. And it was something they didn't talk about.
That's Sandra Muller. Her family also survived the bombing and the internment to return home to Unalaska.
I do remember my grandma, when she would babysit us, she would point up on one of the hills up here and say, you know, watch out up over the hills. You're going to see, you know, the Japanese are going to come get you if you don't behave. So that was always something that, you know, that would be very scary. So I'm thinking now that it's probably something that really impacted her a lot. She didn't talk much about it either. But I always thought that was something she relived. I think it's really taught me to be kind to people and to try to hear them. I think that's what my parents and family did. They had to figure out how to best survive. I think the military had to say, you know, how are we going to survive in the Aleutians? I mean, there's a lot of casualties and illnesses when they came here. They weren't used to it. Same with the internment. And so I think it teaches me that you're going to be facing all these different obstacles, but you got to be resilient and figure out, you know, a way to solve it.
For you, do you find that talking about it is helpful to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I haven't talked about it ever.
This is one of the first times you've talked about it with someone?
Oh, yeah. First time.
This is the first time?
Yeah. I think part of this internment, while it was a very important part of our history, I think it's a blip compared to, you know, the 10 or more thousands that are here. And so for me, I want to try to help people recognize that, you know, this is a very special place. We should take care of it. And also understand how your ancestors walked these very hills. It's kind of chilling for me to be out berry picking knowing my grandma was there. Now just think about her grandmother there. You know, we've been here a long time. It's just, to me, it's a defining point in our history. And I think there's some bad in it, but I think there's always good in it. And to really just celebrate that we survived it, you know, that it's something that it happened. You know, it's, you can't go back and change that. So let's learn about it and let's protect it.
You can visit our website for more stories on the bombing of Dutch Harbor, the Anungan internment, and the Greater Aleutian Campaign of World War II. KUCB.org has photos and stories from the 75th commemoration, as well as interviews with evacuees, veterans, and their descendants. On social media, a fisherman has posted images of halibut bycatch headed for the grinder at Trident Seafoods plant in Kodiak. The post has gotten a lot of attention online and sparked criticism of Trident, the Gulf of Alaska trawl fleet, and a body that regulates commercial fishing. KMXT's Daisha Eaton has the story.
A conveyor belt whisks bright red fish with bulging quarter-sized eyes and spiny fins past workers inside Kodiak's Trident Seafoods processing plant.
Today we're processing rockfish caught in the waters around Kodiak.
That's Paul Lumsden, plant manager for Trident Seafoods Operations in Kodiak. Trident is the largest primary processor of seafood in the United States and is heavily invested in Alaska.
We're a company built by fishermen for fishermen, and we don't just buy pollock or cod or crab or salmon or halibut. We buy everything that we can sustainably harvest and feed the world with. Halibut is a very important part of our business.
Longtime fisherman Eric Velsko says if Trident really cares about halibut and sustainability, some things need to change. He recently called out Trident on Facebook, posting photos and video of excessive halibut bycatch at the plant that appeared to be from the local trawl fishery and which was going to be turned into fish meal.
Totes full of halibut, and, you know, obviously that had some markings and looked a little damaged. They weren't gutted or dressed, as we call them, long lines, which meant the only place they could have come off of was a a trawl vessel.
In all, Velsko alleges there were around 15 totes, each containing about 1,000 pounds of fish. The images were taken in the fall of 2017, when a fellow fisherman captured them but wanted to remain anonymous. So Velsko posted the images to his Facebook page this May with a paragraph alleging wastefulness.
I just threw it up there, just not really thinking anything of it. And the next thing I knew, it was all kinds of people commenting and resharing it.
At last check, Velsko's post had been shared more than 500 times. The Trident plant in Kodiak processes many varieties of fish from all gear types. The majority of the fish processed at the plant is pollock, but they also process a significant amount of fish caught with bottom trawl gear, such as Pacific cod, flatfish, and rockfish. Bottom trawling involves pulling a net along the ocean floor. Sometimes they haul up halibut, too.
Every fishery has some element of bycatch, and it's impossible to just catch exactly what you're after.
That's Julie Bonney, executive director of Alaska Groundfish Data Bank and a paid advocate for the trawl fishery. She says the trawl fishery operates under strict regulations. They're not allowed to keep a single halibut. She says most are discarded at sea, but ones that aren't are sorted out and end up at the processing plant.
The plant is required to enumerate every one of those fish, and it goes on a fish ticket. NOAA Enforcement examines every fish ticket, and if they feel that the vessel was egregious in terms of their sorting practices, then that vessel will get a monetary fine.
There's an overall bycatch cap of 1,705 tons for the Gulf trawl fishery. Bonney says it's hard to tell whether the halibut that appears in Velsko's Facebook post was collected into those blue totes over one delivery or many deliveries of hundreds of thousands of pounds of fish headed for market. Paul Lumsden, the Trident plant manager, also saw Velsko's post.
I did see the photos, yes, and that was alarming to me. It was disheartening, to say the least.
But he says the images were taken out of context.
The frustrating thing is when you see a 30-second video like that and you don't know the background. When that video shows a full tote, 1,000 pounds of fish being dumped into a truck, gives a false representation, like there's just tote after tote after tote after tote, and that's simply not the case.
Velsko, the fisherman who posted the video, says he believes what's happening with halibut at the Trident plant in Kodiak is legal, but immoral and wasteful. And it was especially upsetting to him in light of recent restrictions on the halibut fishery due to conservation concerns. And he says there's a reason he waited 6 months to post the photos and video. He wanted the issue to be front and center at the upcoming meeting of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which is scheduled to take place in Kodiak June 4th through the 11th. A report about observer coverage is on the agenda. In Kodiak, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Two big names in Alaska politics have jumped into the race for governor. Friday was the cutoff for candidates hoping to run in the fall election, and joining the list of gubernatorial hopefuls were former U.S. Senator Mark Begich and former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell. They are among 10 others hoping to unseat incumbent Governor Bill Walker, who is running as an independent. Democrat Begich was the mayor of Anchorage from 2003 until 2009, when he won a seat in the U.S. Senate after narrowly defeating longtime Senator Ted Stevens. He served one term before losing his re-election bid to current Senator Dan Sullivan. Now, Begich's filing for the Democratic primary has convinced Walker not to run in that same primary election, despite winning a court battle over whether he could enter the Democratic primary. A Walker spokesperson says he'll only run in the general election. That sets up what will likely be a three-way governor's race between Walker and the winners of the Democratic and Republican primaries. Meanwhile, former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell has joined the list of Republican candidates, which includes former Mat-Su State Senator Mike Dunleavy and Anchorage businessman Scott Hawkins. Treadwell describes himself as a conservative businessman and was the state's second-in-command from 2010 to 2014. He also ran for the U.S. Senate, but lost to Sullivan in the 2014 Republican primary. For the upcoming governor's race, both parties' primaries will be held August 21st, with the general election set for November 6th. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.